Tax season has arrived, and doing taxes without the right help can feel overwhelming. Intuit TurboTax is here now to guide you through it with confidence. Match with a TurboTax full-service expert who handles everything for you from start to finish. Your dedicated expert checks every single deduction and credit to help you get the best possible outcome so you can feel confident you're getting every dollar you deserve. And the best part? You'll see real-time updates on your expert's progress right on your phone while you live your life. Plus, you get unlimited expert help at no extra cost, even on nights and weekends during tax season. Visit TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Full Service Experts. Real-time updates only on iOS mobile app.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. One in four honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number. The $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Monique Tepe spent 8 years knowing her ex-husband had allegedly threatened to kill her. According to the unsealed affidavit, witnesses told investigators McKee strangled her during the marriage, forced unwanted sex on her, and told her directly that he could end her life whenever he wanted. She divorced him in 2017. She never filed a public police report. She never obtained a protective order. She told friends and family she was afraid, and then she got up every morning and lived her life anyway. That's the part of this case that doesn't make headlines but matters the most. What does it cost to function, to work, to fall in love again, to raise children while carrying the knowledge that someone has promised to kill you? Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, is with us. She spent over 30 years working with survivors of intimate partner violence in shelters and clinical settings. She's also a survivor herself. Her ex-husband died by revenge suicide after she asked for the divorce. She knows what it means to live under that shadow. Today, we are talking about the psychological burden Monique carried, why the people around her may not have fully understood it, and what it actually takes to survive when someone has made you a target. Siobhan's book is this one, Nightbird. It has her story in it of survival and of getting back to life in it. Highly suggest checking it out. Nightbird, available wherever books are sold. Siobhan, as always, welcome. I always look forward to our conversations. Let's get into this. Strangulation, it's considered one of the most significant predictors of future lethality in domestic violence situations. At least one witness told investigators that McKee had strangled Monique during their marriage. This is always one that stands out to a lot of people as a huge red flag. Does it stand out to you as a huge red flag? And what does it indicate clinically about the dangers that she was in? And did she likely understand that danger herself?
Yeah, it is, as you say, the most telling sign of potential lethality. It's terrifying for the victim because the perpetrator is literally saying, I have your life in my hands, mm-hmm. and I can dominate you and control you. And it's terrifying to be in that situation. That's the kind of thing that never leaves you. You know, that trauma is stored in the nervous system. It's stored in the body, and it impacts a person forever. It mm-hmm. leaves them with PTSD.
Let's talk about what a lot of people are looking back here on, and because it's all we have left to look back on is records of the situation, because obviously Monique and Spencer are gone. So what did they leave in the wake of their lives? And we, as far as we know, don't see police reports. We don't see complaints. We don't see really much of anything other than the divorce filing that Monique had, gone through and given to Michael nearly a decade ago, when they, supposedly settled all of that. Yet we have all of these stories from her family, from friends, that she lived in fear for all of these years, that these threats were very real, at least during the marriage. We don't know exactly what was said after the marriage. But that's something that a lot of folks are looking at and wondering, why wouldn't someone file complaints or something with authorities? Let's say, for example, if there were threats after the marriage, I kind of get like it's settled law, it's settled case. Once that divorce is done, you don't necessarily need to go back and relitigate that. You hope that it's done when the divorce is there, but if there was more, and just speculating, if there was more, what would be the reasons that people don't go to law enforcement, that don't get this on the record, but deal with it themselves?
Yeah, about 50% of the time, restraining orders and contact with law enforcement will cause the perpetrator to stop.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful. But in the other categories, it about 20%, it makes no difference. They don't necessarily escalate, but they don't stop. But then they can get locked up, and there can be legal consequences for it, of course. But in a small percentage of the cases, it can escalate the threat and make them more likely to act on the threat. And I think a lot of women intuit this. They just mm-hmm. have a gut sense that he's going to get worse and get more dangerous if I make reports. So that would be my guess here, that she was a smart woman, and she was just hoping that this would die down and he would move on and get in another relationship and maybe get the focus off her. But clearly that wasn't what happened.
Is that ever a good plan? Is it ever a good plan if you are getting threats, if you are getting stalking type behavior or something? Let's say he was communicating in some way, shape, or form in an unwanted way after the marriage, and she didn't report it. And I'm not faulting her, and I'm not faulting anybody who doesn't report
not
this
at
stuff.
All.
I want to be clear about that, because like you just said, 50% will stalk. It's like you report it, you're rolling the dice here, and the dice aren't exactly in your favor. The way that this could roll out when you have this person in your life, there's really not any good path that's going to come of this. And that, I think, is the reality. Number one, that somebody who's in that situation, is that what they need to accept? Because I feel like there is a lot of surprise that happens in situations like this, and maybe it shouldn't be surprises. There's a lot of putting your head in the sand sometimes. Let's just keep moving on and hope this goes away. There's a lot of everything other than actually accepting and dealing with the reality of the situation that one is in. Accepting out of the gate, if you have a character like this, number one, it's not your fault, but it doesn't mean just because it's not your fault that it's going away or that it's not there. That I'm curious, at the beginning, should this be something that people just need to wrap their brains around? That if there's a person like this in your life, it's going to be a rough road, as shitty as it is, as much as you don't want it to be. It is what it is. You better figure out ways to deal with it effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of women in these worst case scenarios with somebody who has such a potential for danger end up going into hiding, changing their name, leaving the state, erasing their social media presence, buying guard dogs, arming themselves. And I'm not saying that that that's an immediate thing that everybody needs to do. But I have seen cases where people felt this person was so dangerous and was just not giving up and mm-hmm. was making threats. Sometimes even when they get locked up for stalking, they are able to write letters to them from prison, yeah. you know, and
how is that possible? Siobhan, I don't mean to interrupt you, but if you're in prison for stalking and you've been convicted, how are you still allowed to contact that victim?
I think they're not supposed to, but how they, you know, and it's probably different in every jail or every prison, how people get letters out. I don't think it's always handled the same way. But I had one client who was getting letters from her abuser saying these veiled things like, I love you so much. I hope nothing ever happens to you. I hope someone doesn't do something to you. And it just yeah. terrified her. So yeah, this all needs to be dealt with in a very severe way.
I think the answer to how could they write a letter and they put it in the mail and you're relying on Cletus at the mail department to catch it and go, mm-hmm. oh, there's not supposed to be any contact there. Mm-hmm. And if that person has a no contact order and they're already in jail, they have nothing to lose, especially if they're already there right. for life. Right. oh, I shouldn't send that. Okay. Oops. Mm-hmm. One got out. I mean, you're relying on somebody catching it basically. Mm-hmm. And it's not always going to be the most reliable way. So, I mean, it's going to happen and mm-hmm. people are going to do what they're going to do. I mean, mm-hmm. just like this. So it is important to document though.
Yes.
And I think that is really key here. Again, we're not victim blaming, but if there was contact here, what, because we're all saying, you know, she did everything right. Did she? Did mm-hmm. she do everything right? Should have this, let's say there was contact, should more of this been reported? What and what would it have done, if anything?
Mm-hmm. My gut, I'm trying to put myself in her situation yeah. with this guy. My gut would have been report and be as aggressive as I could possibly get law enforcement to be with him. Yeah. He was trying to function as a professional. Could you have gotten, you know, the word to his licensing board? Mm-hmm. Could there have been more consequences for him? Because the longer it went on, probably he became emboldened over mm-hmm. time and went on for years and there were never any consequences for him. So we can look back with hindsight and say, maybe it would have gone in a different direction. You know, they can put GPS trackers on people if they think they're going by your house and pick them up that way. And again, there are cases where people have tried that. It didn't work. But I think my gut would have been saying, I've got to get more aggressive with getting this guy locked up.
And then there's that boogeyman of, you know, if I start to escalate things to protect myself, am I escalating him?
Right.
And it's, I don't want to characterize and say it's always a man doing this, but I imagine the stats are heavily leaning toward yes. male versus yes. female.
Yes.
And so how do you not enrage that man that I'm going to come after you harder now because okay. you're coming after me, mm-hmm. especially that's him being fear. A physician. If you're going after his license because of what he's doing in his personal time, wow, he looks like the type who would allegedly just become enraged by that.
Yeah. And that's a possibility. And I'm sure that was in her mind. And so it's such a judgment call. And that's, I think, where in working with a domestic violence advocate in your community, look at every possible resource, and including if you're still scared after 5 years, 8 years later, and you're noticing anything about this person, stalking, monitoring, those kind of things, I would really look at disappearing. You know, yeah. it's a life or death situation, which I think is horrible that victims have to even consider doing that. But I have seen people who did it.
Why don't we have more safeguards in place for situations like this? Is it, and I'm asking, I don't know the answer to this. I'm just asking, is it because the system is abused, because it has the potential to be abused by people who really want to just make life miserable for an ex? And I'm saying, if it were, the tables were turned here a bit, let's say McKee, and there's situations like this where Let's say McKees has moved on with his life. He's not doing anything at all. And Monique has the grudge. Monique doesn't want to see him. And this is not this situation, but there are other ones where she's like, I'm just going to keep making life miserable because he was shitty to me in that relationship. Yeah. And I'm going to go after this and I'm going to go after that. I'm going to make these claims. It is, he said, she said, unless you can prove anything. So why? I mean, I guess, is that it? Is it because it can be abused? Because there's a potential for the abuse? Because it has been abused in the past? And if it has been abused in the past, is it at a level where that erring on the side of, well, we can't do a whole lot because other people could really abuse this or people could pull those levers? What is it? What's going on? Why do we seem to not have a very clear path to protecting anybody when they legitimately need it? And it seems to be that path, the roadblocks are up because we're afraid of blocking something, an error, basically. Mm-hmm.
I think we need more education in the court system about domestic violence. You know, there are judges that take it very seriously, and there are judges who don't, who will have more of that, oh, this is just he said, she said. And that's the importance of documenting everything and having witnesses and having evidence, having logs where you note the dates and the times, and you basically present something to the court that can convince them that this is credible. It's not just, you know, bitter feelings after a bad divorce. Mm-hmm. And yes, in bad divorces, people will make all kinds of accusations that aren't true. I've certainly seen lots of that. Mm-hmm. And it could be that certain judges just get really, you know, lax about it because they see so much where nothing really happens. It's just people fighting, and that can go on for a long time.
And I mean, statistically, I mean, this is an outlier. It's not like everybody who goes through a bad divorce ends up being murdered. I mean, we're talking a very, very small percentage. So if every judge were to react, you know, it's easy to Monday morning quarterback this and go, well, they filed this, they could have done this or that. Like, yeah. Or absolutely nothing would have happened. A judge would have looked at it and went, he said these things. He lives 300 miles away. He hasn't done anything to you in 8 years. And what do you want me to do about it? I mean that really is the reality of the situation from what we know thus far. There could be more. We don't know. Is the recommendation every time report? I don't know the answer. I mean, if someone's in a situation, they feel like they're being stalked, they have evidence of it, more, and not just feel. I want to take feeling out of this because you don't go on things just on feelings. Mm-hmm. You want to go on if there is evidence, if he is texting, if you got this, you got that. Yeah. Should all that be documented with authorities? Because I think, too, people should understand when you document something with authorities, doesn't mean they're always going to go in and do something to that person. Right. It gets on the record so that if they do something, they can go back to the record and go, oh, looks like they called in a concern back here. Yeah. This seems to add to it.
You're building a case. You're building a case. And I think that's really an important part of it because judges, as you say, they don't know if people come in and make up awful things about their exes all the time. And judges sort of have to sort that out. And that's why you need the documentation. And, you know, you need law enforcement to go out and talk with these people when there are these breaches of the restraining order or whatever. There's a lot of other things that come to mind. I think if anybody had done a good psychological evaluation on this guy, you know, with psych testing, I think they would have picked up on this is someone who really is dangerous and we need to keep closer tabs on this. And I don't know at this point that judges order that typically. If there's child custody involved, yes, you can get psychological evaluations ordered, and often then you get a report saying this person is legitimately dangerous and should not have contact with the children, and this woman is at risk. But I doubt that that's done very often in a case like this. If I had the magic wand, I'd say let's do testing on him.
I wonder, with him being a physician, if that might have cleared him, that he walks into a courtroom, maybe into a meeting with officials, and they're like, oh, he's a physician. Mm-hmm. You know, he's already passed every test. Mm-hmm. Our society elevates people in that field to such a godlike level that they look like they can't do any wrong. You know, here's a guy who's saving lives. Why would he ever be a threat to anybody? Mm-hmm. I just feel like he could have skated if they had started probing into him because of his profession.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I was asked once by an attorney who was a defense attorney who was out of state. It was kind of this convoluted way I met him. But he said, would you come in and just talk, no testing, but just talk with my client who's been accused of domestic violence and kidnapping, and it was a federal charge because he took his wife, you know, it was, they were married, kidnapped her and took her over state lines. So it's this big case. Would you come in and just talk with him? He says he didn't do any of it. I'm just curious about your opinion. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with the guy for 15 minutes. And it was so clear to me that he did it. He still denied to me that he did it. But when I saw the way his thinking pattern was going and his personality structure, I was like, oh, hell yes, he did it. You know?
Yeah.
And I gave that.
He knew he did it though, right?
I mean, he knew he did it. He was psychopathic. He was calculating. And that leaked out very quickly in my interview with him. So.
It kind of brings to mind a little bit, and we haven't seen this yet in this case, but who knows if we will or not. We're seeing it over in the Koberger case right now, where there's a lawsuit against WSU for not taking action against Koberger sooner. There was 13 complaints over in that case about his uncomfortable behavior, not necessarily a lot of it going into illegal territory, but enough where someone should have maybe been fired. Should we be doing more psych testing in general in areas, in certain professions? Maybe that is in places where you do hold someone's life in your hand. I don't know, like being a surgeon in the medical field, in the psych field, in the law enforcement. I would think there's just certain ones where we may want to do regular psych testing to make sure the folks that we have employed are still good and healthy mentally to be doing those jobs. And that may then be a point of contention of continued employment. I'm wondering here if that should be something that's done. And if it were to be done, what would it actually lead to, other than maybe you don't get the job? Just because you fail the psych test doesn't mean, oh, well, it turns out you're kind of, you know, going over here into the dark triad of thinking. They can't just go and arrest you for that. Right. It would just push them, you know, probably somewhere else that's not going to be as strict on testing. But if we did more things like that, would that be beneficial to society? Again, there's, again, 1,000 ways that this could go. But what's your thoughts on that? Do we not pay attention? Do we not give enough attention to that in areas that may, you know, may put a speed bump in front of those who are not mentally well?
I sure would vote for that one. And of course, there would be civil liberties people who say that's invasive of privacy and you can't do things like that. And they would fight it in court. But, you know, to work in a nuclear power plant, you have to have a full battery of psychological tests because they want to make sure you're not going to go in and try to blow the thing up and that you're stable enough to be there. My late husband, the one that killed himself, he applied ironically as a job for a probation officer.
Oh, geez.
And he met the requirements. He did an oral interview. He was, you know, manipulative. So he aced the oral interview, but the final step before he got the job was psych testing. Mm-hmm. And boy, did he flunk that.
Yeah.
And that was when the psychologist who did the testing really nailed the cluster B traits and said, this is not an appropriate person. Well, when he was declined the job, he requested the copy of the psych testing, which they gave him. And that blew him up. Boy, he had a fit about that because he thought he could bamboozle everyone. He couldn't bamboozle the MMPI. So, yeah, he would have been a terrible person to be a probation officer.
What about this? I come up with 500 ideas how Tony saves the world today and fail at every one of them. Psych testing before marriage. The idea of doing that. I mean, look, I'm about to get married, right? I'm about to get married myself. I just wrapped up putting together my prenup. You know, that's kind of a thing that a lot of people, you know, it's optional, but, you know, a lot of people do. I've not heard of this being a normal thing in any sort of marriage or
relationship. But why not? Why the hell not?
I mean, I don't know that I'm going to like, hey, honey, let's do a psych test. But I mean, it's not common. It's not normal. It would take a long time to be normalized. But imagine how many relationships could be not entered into.
Yes. What if Monique didn't enter into the relationship with him based on that? Tony, you and I'm sorry for just like out of the blue, I just went, fuck! Because, that should, you know, if you have to go to church and sit down with the pastor and talk about, you know, how you're going to raise the kids, you should have one of these freaking tests.
It's one of the, I mean, it's kind of the engine that does everything and we ignore it. The psychology, the mental end of this is what is everything. And we like to take a look at all of the other pieces of the puzzle, except the main engine. It's like, well, how are the amenities? Mm-hmm. Are those good? Not the actual fuel that keeps this thing going. Yep. We just hope, well, they seem like a lovely person. Why not evaluate that a little bit more? Why not make that more of a common thing? I mean, a lot of couples do like premarital counseling and things, not because they have problems, but because they want to, you know, iron out anything ahead of time. They want to go into it with the best foot forward. And a lot of couples are doing this. A lot of couples are going into relationships, doing a lot of pre-work before there's problems. So people have the appetite to be healthy, to go and enter into a relationship in a healthy way. Is this a thing, or did I just kind of pull that out of my ass and nobody's doing this?
I think you pulled it out of your ass, but I agree with you. It's a wonderful idea. And if I were ever, if my current husband, I don't plan to get out of this marriage, it's been 20 years, but if I were shopping, you know, the one thing I did before I married Mike, my spouse, is I did do the people search background check, you know, for criminal stuff, any arrests. There weren't any. Looking at financial status, you know, have there been a bunch of bad debts or whatever. So I always encourage my clients to do that because sometimes they find things. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's scary because often another thing I tell people is you don't really know if you're with a good manipulator. It can take a couple of years before you start seeing signs that something is really wrong here, whether it's lying, whether it's money problems, you know. The other thing that would be lovely is, can we have a group with his exes where everybody sits in a room and talks about what was your experience with him? I think that would be.
I think that might be a little hard to orchestrate.
That would be hard to orchestrate, but it's my fantasy. Yeah.
There's a great episode of Everybody Loves Raymond where every former girlfriend of Robert was put together. I don't know if it was Marie that put it together, the, you know, the mother-in-law or the mother who was overbearing, but like four women sitting there talking about how bad Robert was in relationships. And he wasn't abusive. He was just a moron. He was just an idiot. But yeah, you know, there should be some way for you to figure out what the person is really like when you're going into this huge relationship. Mm-hmm. We do it for jobs. Why don't we do it for marriages?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It, I mean, another area that could be done on, I would also imagine dating websites. I mean, it would certainly, I mean, look, eHarmony used to kind of be like that about a decade or two ago. Yeah. It used to be, you're doing a 2-hour test.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is today. I haven't used it in decades, but it was almost like a psych test. And then it really was particular on who it matched you with. Mm-hmm. I feel like today, and I could be wrong about that, but when I was back on those sites, you know, a year or two ago when I was getting back into dating, it's very quick. It's more like, here's a few things about you. Here's some pictures. Good luck. If we had, and maybe this does exist, maybe I'm off, But if we had things like that, maybe some sites where it's like, and by the way, everyone has gone through a psych test and not everybody gets in. Not everybody just gets on the site because they want to pay whatever. That might be another, you know, another ticket to entry. It would probably be significantly priced, but it would be something where, okay, I'm going to go into this pool and at least you know the pool you're going into. At least you know there was a test done. Mm-hmm. How easy is it for someone kind of in the dark triad of personalities to fake their way through one of these tests, to manipulate it to get the type of results that they want?
They could certainly manipulate to a degree, but that's where, and this is where it would get really expensive, and we probably don't have enough psychologists in the country to actually administer tests like that.
Yeah.
But if you go into tests like the MMPI, Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, the people who are trying to fake, it catches it because there are lie scales built in. And that's one of the marvelous things about a good test like that is people who are trying to game the test, they get flagged as dishonest. And so that's sort of the gold standard.
Fascinating. I'd love to get everybody's thoughts on that in the comment section on YouTube or on our Substack. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
It's tax season, and by now, we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.